Good afternoon, and welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Eco News Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Joining me in the studio is Tim Hayden, Natural Resource Division Lead at the Yurok Tribe, and John Schultz, District Conservationist at the Natural Resources Conservation Service. Welcome, gentlemen. Pleased you can be here today on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, let's do some introductions. John, let's start with you. Who are you? Why are you here? Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what is the Natural Resources Conservation Service?
Okay. Yeah, my name is John Schultz, and I'm born and raised here in Humboldt County. I went to school at Humboldt State, grew up on the family farm here in Ferndale. And when I came to Humboldt, I realized I wanted to study and get into the profession of resource conservation. And so after school, I started to work for the Humboldt County Resource Conservation District and then moved into the position with the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And NRCS is an agency under the United States Department of Agriculture that does conservation work on private lands primarily. That would include most of the agricultural lands in the country, so cropland, pasture land, range land, and forest land.
Did NRCF have its start with like the New Deal and some of that kind of cropland soil runoff work initiated by FDR?
Yes, definitely. So our agency was born out of the Dust Bowl and the tragedies that took place there with soil erosion in the Oklahoma, Texas areas, and realizing that current farming practices were destroying the resources in that region and a need to change and to adopt more conservation practices. So the Soil Conservation Service was born, and then actually in the 90s we had a name change to the Natural Resources Conservation Service because soil was not our only resource issue that we were tasked with protecting anymore. So now we look at plants, air, soil, water, and a whole host of other resource issues when it comes to private land management.
All right. Also joining us in the studio is another HSU alum, class of 97, I just learned, Tim Hayden. All right. So, Tim, who are you and what do you do for the Yurok Tribe?
Well, as you mentioned, I graduated from Humboldt State in 1997. I was a fisheries major here at HSU, and I've been working for the Yurok Tribe for about 20 years. In our fisheries program, of course, working on fisheries and in-stream flow management for the most part, fish population, monitoring and research. About 2 years ago, I took a position as our natural resources division lead, essentially the director for our natural resources departments, and that's when I met John. The tribe's been working on a number of, the tribe has grown a lot since the early 90s. In 93, the tribe adopted its tribal constitution. It wasn't long after that we really got active in managing our own resources, starting with fisheries and forestry, and we've really grown for the last 20 years, really becoming an active manager in the tribe's own resources, working with our federal partners, state partners, and, all sorts of partners. But, yeah, I've lived in Humboldt County since about 94, so I've been here. I came up and wanted to stay, and here I am.
Oh, we're glad you're here. And this tribal growth, I think that's the reason that we're all here in the studio today. So the tribe has grown both in its expertise and the amount of work that it does, both on its own lands and on public lands or federal public lands like the Forest Service. But the tribe has also grown its own ownership in the last 20 years, in particular the last 10. So can you tell me, Tim, a little bit about some of the recent acquisitions by the tribe? And then we can start to get into what the tribe wants to do with this land.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, the tribe adopted its constitution in 1993. Really, one of the major provisions of the constitution is to reacquire and reestablish the tribe's land base, primarily in the ancestral territory of the Yurok tribe. So, yeah, that's one of our goals. And the tribe's worked really hard with a lot of partners to do just that. The tribe, even though the reservation extends from the confluence of the Trinity River to the Pacific Ocean, and it's pretty vast, a lot of that, even within the reservation boundary, is privately owned. So starting there, we really made efforts to reacquire as much of our tribal land base as possible, mostly from private landowners that are willing to work with us. In 2011, We finalized a pretty long deal that's been many decades in the making, really, to purchase first two phases of property with a really great partner, the Western Rivers Conservancy, who's really been a great partner and worked with us to acquire roughly 50,000 acres of property from a private landowner, a timber company here in the region.
All right. So we've grown this land, and as you mentioned, it was land owned by a private industrial timberland owner. So it comes with that legacy and some scars. And so the tribe is working to fix some of these legacy problems and restore it to perhaps a different condition than the way they found it. You're listening to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, and I'm speaking with Tim Hayden of the Yurok Tribe and John Schultz of NRCS about the Yurok Tribe's restoration work. So let's talk about some of this kind of early phase work on restoration. What are you doing right now to improve the land?
Well, like I mentioned, in 2011 is when we closed on that first phase, we call phase one of our acquisition efforts. And along with the acquisition, a part of our, it was a pretty complex agreements to make that happen. And of course, some of our state and federal partners that we work with, of course, we have to live up to some of our land management agreements as well. And part of that was to do some pretty large scale restoration work. The tribe has also developed about 33,000 acres in carbon sequestration projects. So I think our challenge has been to conduct all this restoration work, integrate it with our carbon projects and some of our other land management efforts. And so, yeah, we've done a lot of work, early restoration work with NRCS as a partner.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about something like that. Road decommissioning. Is that stuff that you've taken on so far?
Yeah. And maybe John can chime in here too. But yeah, some of the earlier work that we started out with working with NRCS was we started doing some planning efforts. They've been great at providing technical assistance to the tribes, working to develop some sub-basin plans. And then we, as part of our phase one acquisition, started with some bridge replacement just to access the property. There was some roads assessment. We recognized some of the, as you mentioned, the legacy effects from some of the commercial timber operations. And so, yeah, we started work, I think that was probably about 2012, doing some assessments, and maybe by 2013, really ratcheting up some of the road decommissioning work, some of the road maintenance, which is still a huge need throughout all of our property. And then also some forest improvement projects and some shaded fuels breaks and some fuels work. So
it's a lot of stuff that you're doing, and I imagine that you have to triage the projects. So when you're looking for kind of sediment reduction projects or other forest improvement projects, John, what are you looking for, and how do you kind of prioritize these projects given the vast number of things that you could be doing?
Yeah, definitely. So, here in Humboldt County, especially with sensitive salmon habitat being the main driver for a lot of the work that our agency takes on, sediment reduction off of roadways is really a number one priority. It's some of the easily treatable sediment inputs that go into the waterways, affecting, of course, everything that sediment does to the salmon in their life cycle, impacting spawning grounds, increasing water temperatures, and so on and so forth. So that's some of the first phase low-hanging fruit that bears a tremendous investment to not just watershed health, but I think overall, management and access opportunities to parts of the property that maybe had some serious road and wintertime access issues. And so as far as prioritizing those, it's really, I'm trying to think of the term, it's, really protecting the areas that the salmon currently are really in abundance in. And when you look at the resources that the Yurok tribe has and the cultural significance and importance of that fishery to the tribe, that really elevates the priority of doing these types of projects within the both the Klamath and the Trinity watersheds as they are in Humboldt County.
So when the tribe purchased these lands, did it come with kind of a map of here's where we know sediment's coming in, or did you have to drive around on ATVs and look for things that are, poorly sloped or falling in or landsliding?
Yeah, there's kind of a general sense of kind of where the road networks were on the land as they were acquired. What we found early on was conditions were changing pretty much storm after storm. And, you know, with limited maintenance, you know, people just being out on the landscape, checking culverts and those kind of things. There was, you know, a road one day and it wasn't there the next. And so that those were our number one priority site, you know, bridge replacements, really upsizing culverts, armoring road sections that were in somewhat unstable areas, or considering and completing decommissioning projects in places where roads just didn't make sense anymore for the management and the work that the tribe was looking at doing into the future.
All right. So, Tim, you talked about doing some restoration forestry. Can you describe kind of what the pre-restoration forest condition looked like?
Well, you know, I mentioned that we've kind of tackled this acquisition effort in a couple of phases, right? We've what we're calling our phase one property, which is in the upper reservation. It's roughly about 24,000 acres. And then our phase two lands, which is another additional 25,000 acres. And that's primarily in the Blue Creek watershed. So in our phase one property, what we've really done is focused on, well, development of a pretty large scale carbon project. We'll have some pretty minor timber, commercial timber operations, but for the most part, we've devoted most of that, those lands, to carbon. So there's a huge fuels buildup over the years. You know, fire has been suppressed. Use of cultural fire has really been suppressed. And so one of our goals is to, well, I guess challenges really is, you know, how do we, you know, manage that property to enhance our carbon sequestration project, address the fuels issues, and meet these multiple land management objectives, because we want to restore habitat for sensitive species like Humboldt Martin, for instance, and then definitely, you know, address some of these sediment issues and other issues for fish. So yeah, we're dealing with pretty, you know, it's impacted lands. Of course, it's all been, all the old growth has pretty much been, you know, harvested. There may be some remnant around, but it's essentially, you know, second and third growth forest type. So we want to, you know, manage that phase one property for carbon. So it looks like, you know, it's been pretty successful and really been beneficial to the tribe. On our phase two property, which is a little different goals and objectives, we're working to develop what we're calling a forest or salmon sanctuary. So around 15,000 acres of lower Blue Creek will be devoted to basically developing an old growth, you know, forest with old growth habitat characteristics for salmon, for sensitive species. So yeah, we've got our work cut out for us. There's, you know, 50,000 acres is a pretty big plot of land.
Yeah, it's a large chunk. So to help develop some of these old growth characteristics, are you doing things like Redwood National Park is doing,
mm-hmm.
where you are taking some of these overly stocked, so overly dense, very thick, what we call dog hair thicket type forests, and thinning them out so that you can have, you know, more nutrients going so that trees can get bigger faster?
Yeah, I think that's essentially the strategy. I'm sure it'll be a mix of a different forest management techniques and applications. But I think that's one of the reasons we're working with NRCS and other partners to develop, you know, a real comprehensive land management strategy to meet those various objectives. So both, you know, develop this forest sanctuary, but also have a working forest and a carbon, you know, working carbon project that provides some economic benefits to the tribe. So to me, a big part of that is planning. But yeah, I envision that, you know, we'll be doing a lot of intensive forest management, you know, thin and release. Fuels is a huge issue. And as I mentioned, the planning effort that we're working with NRCS on, we're developing a traditional land management plan that'll hopefully integrate all those various objectives that the tribe's trying to accomplish and really be the guide for us to move forward with good land management.
All right. You're listening to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, and I'm speaking with Tim Hayden of the Yurok Tribe and John Schultz of NRCS about the Yurok Tribe's restoration work. All right. So this tribal management plan, that is very exciting. And I know that the Yurok have in the past and continue to push for currently a lot of cultural burning. Can you describe what cultural burning is for our listeners?
Well, you know, the Yurok tribes really, they've been stewards of the land and the river for forever. And, you know, we want to continue that. I think, you know, the work that we want to accomplish within RCS is develop essentially an integrated land management plan, but really be based on tribal, you know, culture, tribal ecological knowledge and traditional practices. Cultural fire and use of prescribed fire is going to be a big part of that. I think, you know, as I mentioned over the years, there's suppression of, you know, the use of fire as really a large-scale management tool. I think some of the fire agencies that we're working with or starting to work with are coming around to the fact that, you know, we can use it in a responsible, safe way. And with the recent land acquisition efforts, we have an opportunity to really use it as a tool, you know, evaluate it with adaptive management, and hopefully it'll really be an effective tool for what we want to accomplish.
So what will fire accomplish? If we return fire to the landscape, what can we kind of expect?
I mean, as Tim mentioned, the people that have inhabited those lands since time immemorial have stewarded those lands and created the landscape that the white settlers have really experienced for only the last 160 years when it comes to the North Coast. And so, you know, returning fire as a management tool back to the landscape is essentially bringing back the essential disturbance that shape the forest and the ecosystems that we have here. They require fire in order to survive and thrive, and that's been the management since forever. And so, you know, I think a lot of the things that can be accomplished is, you know, increasing, you know, forest health and diversity, regaining lands that have been overgrown by forests that maybe are more prairie ecosystems for the species that depend on that, elk and deer, or, you know, mostly just looking at it as an ecosystem and a habitat type for a lot of different animals that need that in order to survive. And so, you know, fire as an essential tool is really more about, yeah, healing the land and bringing it back to what it's evolved to be in thousands and thousands of years.
So I know that prairie restoration and oak woodland restoration is going to probably be a critical component of any tribal restoration plan. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of these kind of prairie ecosystems for the tribe? I imagine that they help support ungulates, which are an important food source, as well as for the oak woodlands, a good supply of acorn.
I think, you know, those coastal prairies historically provided, you know, great hunting grounds, natural areas to gather, you know, foodstuffs, basket materials, and other, you know, traditional, you know, plant and animal resources. So, you know, what we've seen on our lands through some of our historical assessments is really a loss of some of these critical coastal prairie habitats. And so, you know, that makes, for us, it's bringing, restoring fire and restoring some of those coastal and upland prairies are going to be an important part of our land management strategy. And you know, from what our elders and other cultural practitioners tell us, is that's where we used fire traditionally, you know, as part of that landscape process. And there was a lot of benefit. So, I mean, just some of our recent assessment work that we've done, looking at historical aerial photos, and over time I've seen a lot of encroachment, both from, you know, firs and other trees, but also some of them have just been replanted by some of these, you know, previous landowners. So one of our goals is definitely to use fire as a tool and restore some of those prairies.
So when we're talking about restoration, we often have some sort of a reference point in which we're thinking about. We're trying to restore it to some point in the past. I imagine for some of these lands, it's been maybe 160 years since the tribe was dispossessed of them, and they've been put under kind of different management regimes. So how can you kind of, what are your reference points? How are you kind of knowing what areas were these coastal prairies and oak woodlands, and how can you kind of take a look back in time at what it once was?
You know, this oak woodland restoration in particular for NRCS has been what I'd say is one of our high points out of the office here in Humboldt County. We work with a lot of private landowners that are now interested in Oak Woodlands management and prairie restoration efforts. And so this question does definitely get thrown around a lot. Of course, you know, aerial photography goes back to probably the early 40s for most of the county. And so, you know, that's one reference point. Another reference point that we're exploring right now is the use of soils and soil information. And so going in and doing more of a forensic kind of study of what soils have more forest characteristics and which soils have more of a grassland characteristic, and really trying to envision what the landscape would have looked like, you know, pre-settlement, to use that term. So, but of course, you know, there's still the unknown of what, you know, forces shifted and changed, you know, even, you know, 1,000, 2,000 years ago. So what point in time, and really, I think what the landscape does look like is driven by the landowner themselves and the goals that they have for their property and for what conservation efforts they're wanting to uphold. And so while for some it may not be a goal to restore all of the oak woodlands that are under the care of one particular landowner, you know, working with the tribe and developing this plan is really going to set the stage as far as of, you know, how, I guess, how much we take on and what the time frame is for it and really how do we accomplish that.
You're listening to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, and I'm speaking with Tim Hayden of the Yurok Tribe and John Schultz of NRCS about the Yurok Tribe's restoration work. All right, so I want to kind of hear some personal reflections about what this work has meant to you. So I know that you just talked, but John, I'm going to put you on the hot seat again. You've been working on this for a couple of years now. What has this kind of partnership with the Yurok Tribe meant to you personally?
Well, personally, I mean, I have some Native ancestry in my own personal family. So, you know, a lot of this is, I guess, maybe righting past injustices and really empowering the people, the Yurok people, to be able to give them the tools that I have with the agency that I work for to be able to take ownership of these lands again and to transform them into what they envision is the direction that they want to go with them.
All right. And Tim, as a tribe employee, your kids are tribal members. What does this mean to you?
Well, it means a lot. And thank you, John, for saying that. I really appreciate that. Yeah, it does mean a lot to me. I feel really privileged and honored to be a part of it. I mean, I love working for the Yurok Tribe. I feel like it's, you know, part of who I am. And, you know, this is a really historic opportunity for us to really, you know, actively manage the tribe's lands again. So there's a lot at stake. I think, you know, we want to use good science. We want to use, you know, traditional, you know, knowledge and culture and really, you know, meet some pretty complex land management goals. But I'm excited. I want to see it to be a success. And certainly, I mean, I feel like the Yurok Tribe has been a leader at a lot of things for a long time, especially, you know, river management and water management. And we want to continue that. We want to really show that we can do some really great things as a land manager, too. You know, restoring the landscape, using cultural fire as a tool, restoring the old growth habitat in our Blue Creek Sanctuary. It's going to be just an awesome thing to be part of.
All right. Well, what's our timeline now? What's going on in this next year or 2 years?
Well, I think we're embarking on a planning process with the aid of our partners. NRCS is a lead with us, and we'll be working to develop what we're calling a Yurok Traditional Land Management Plan. We're trying to engage other partners as well, and I believe that over the next year, 12 to 18 months, we'll hopefully have a really solid plan together that, as I mentioned before, integrates, you know, the various land management strategies and other plans that we've worked on in the past, but really binds that together with this cultural element that we just haven't been there. Yeah, after that, we're hopeful to really begin some good work out there on the landscape.
All right. Well, I wish you both the best of luck, and thank you both for being on the show. I'm looking forward to seeing that management plan in 12, 18 months or something. And maybe we can arrange a field trip for EcoNews listeners to come out and check out what's going on with the tribe, because it sounds like really neat work. And, you know, the tribe also, I should point out, has been doing other really exceptional work, such as the condor reintroduction. So we're really excited here at the EcoNews Report for all that you've been doing.
Thank you.
All right. Well, so this has been the EcoNews Report. My name is Tom Wheeler, and I've been your host for the past half hour. I was just speaking with Tim Hayden and John Schultz about the Yurok Tribe's restoration program. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the archive programs page at khsu.org. Previous shows are also posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. You can also subscribe to the EcoNews podcast on iTunes, so you can listen to it on the go when you're on a long car trip. I recommend downloading a couple of these and just listening through. It's pretty fun. The EcoNews Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks, as always, to Fred for engineering. Join us again next week, right here, for the EcoNews Report.